Let's go.
Are you ready to level up your journey? Welcome to Get On Top, where we dive deep into the riveting tales of self-made entrepreneurs and corporate titans who have scaled the summit of success. We'll uncover the secrets behind their huge rise. Get ready for a roller coaster of insights, inspiration, and a roadmap to elevate both your mindset and your life. This is Get On Top with Morgan Brown. Today's guest is someone who understands risk, not just financially, but personally. Alex McFadden is the founder of Flow Mortgage Co., helping Canadian families build wealth through smart real estate financing. His company has funded over $1 billion in mortgages, serving over 4,000 families across this country. But behind the numbers and strategy is a much deeper story. Alex didn't grow up with certainty. He built his life from tough beginnings. And during COVID, he faced something far more confronting than interest rates. He nearly lost his life. Those moments didn't just change his business, they clarified his purpose. And today, we're talking about resilience, what survival teaches you about money, about building security when you didn't grow up with it, and about what happens when you decide your life has a bigger calling. Please welcome to Get On Top, Alex McFadden. Hello, Alex.
Hello, Morgan. So excited to be here.
I'm so excited. You're here right now. We had such a good conversation on the phone that I wanted to cut it off.
Yeah.
Because we can go.
Yeah. I was hoping it would go on for an hour, to be honest with you, but it was a solid 45 minutes.
It was like a good 45 minutes. Thank you for being with me. I'm so excited to kind of explore your story. And I always, in good fashion with Get On Top, it always starts with a base, you know, where you were standing alone by yourself and looking up that summit and looking up that mountain. And I want you to first kind of give everyone a really clear picture of what that looked like for you and when did it all start for you?
So, I mean, I think the assumption is that I knew where I was going, which would then that I would actually know that I'm at the base of a mountain. But I would say if we were to rewind back to, you know, childhood. Or workhood or whatever you want to call that, I genuinely don't think I actually had a mountaintop that I was looking at. Mm. I mean, we were chatting right before this about, you know, I grew up with, like, my dad worked at a mill.
Okay.
And mom took care of us until they broke up when I was 12, split up, moved out of the town, out of city.
Was that in BC?
Yeah. Okay. We grew up in Surrey.
Oh, great. Okay. Hi, Surrey.
Yeah. So we grew up in Surrey. And, you know, at a young age, I witnessed my parents fighting a lot. And I can talk about it openly, went through a lot of, like, physical trauma for a period of time and witnessed that break apart my family. And that was, like, obviously pretty significant in my life in so many different ways and created a lot of, like, insecurities, anger issues, all sorts of stuff that we don't really want to talk about, but, like, fester deep inside. But we're going there.
We're going there.
When that happened, it was almost like an imprint in my life because my parents didn't have a lot of money to begin with. So I know that we were talking about money here today. And it was about conserving, you know, being as safe as possible. But when they broke up, it was one income between two families, one person on welfare and the next person obviously trying to support that on a mill job, which isn't a lot of money, right? So when I look back at my story, I'm like, that was an imprint that took me 20 years to change in my life and caused me more anxiety and grief around money than anything else. And so we think back at the base of the mountain. I didn't know I was there then, but that was where I was stuck for a long time. And so I didn't know what up was. I didn't know what anything was.
Did you find, like, how old were you when you started to recognize that you had to kind of start building your own future? Like, what age were you when you were like, oh, okay, money, this is, like, you know, welfare, all these other pieces about you that you had to think of.
Right.
When did that kind of when did that really click,
like,
in?
Like, just not having money?
Yeah,
knowing
exactly.
That? Like, right away, you know,
right away.
Like, you know, I was in school and I would see the other kids. I was always a kid that didn't have as much, but I wasn't, like, I was still able to do things, right?
Yeah.
My parents put me in soccer and sports and stuff.
Yeah.
But I think when that happened, I started to recognize that, like, oh, wow, we really don't have much.
Mm-hmm.
And you started to see that separation happen. I started working really young, like 13 years old, like a lot of kids in the neighborhood. And I grew up in a kind of, like, a middle-class community. So there was the, you know, the kids that had it and the kids that didn't as well. And so I think when I was, like, 12, when that happened was when I started to recognize that, okay, we are in a little bit of a different space. And I wouldn't say that woke me up, but it just started to give me that sense of self-reflection and understanding, but I didn't really know what was going on.
Do you feel like that was a pro for you to be in a place where it wasn't one
financial literacy there. You got to see the kind of people that had the money and vice versa below you? Or was it like...
There's only two ways you can go. Mm-hmm. You can be the few who break out of the scarcity mindset, which is all that I had and knew. Or you can be the person that lives that way for your entire life. And that's what I think most people, whether or not in my situation, in a lot of those situations, continue to do.
Repeating it.
Yeah. 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 You see what you're around is what you become and what you know, right? And, you know, it probably took me till I was 30 years old before I was able to see anything outside of what we see as norm or normal around money, around career, around success, around anything, because I didn't know anything better. And so there's that truth that if you think about in places that are in North America or the US, there's these hoods, right? Mm-hmm. And in these hoods, people can't get out of the quote unquote the ghetto or the areas. And I'm not saying I live that bad, so I'm not going there, but no. I'm just saying they can't get out because they can't see anything beyond that because there's nothing there to inspire them. No. And so here are all these stories of success where one person gets out and then it inspires an entire community and city. And then all of a sudden this area continues to breed success. Well, I didn't have that. So it's not that I was poor or broke. I made money to survive and I was fortunate enough to buy a house when I was relatively young. Mm-hmm. But all I knew was, you know, that middle-aged mental mindset. There was nothing beyond that. You work, you make money, you go home.
And you go home. Let's talk a little bit about you past that 13-year-old kind of space. So where did you kind of go into the career that you, like, I want to hear the progression between where you were and where you are now.
I was the worst employee ever. I got fired from like 8 jobs. So it wasn't until I was like in my like early 20s.
Jack of all trades.
Whatever. I just tried it all and I got fired from everything. And I didn't realize it wasn't because I was bad at it. It was because I couldn't take direction.
Okay.
And that was probably a good sign for why I shouldn't work under anybody. I worked in everything. I worked in restaurants. I did 4 years or 3 years. So I did make it a couple years plumbing. Okay. I worked in a variety of retail situations. I worked online. I tried it all until I was in my mid-20s and I got the job that really changed my career trajectory. And it was working for TELUS.
Okay.
Just retail. But I don't even know how I got the job. I don't even remember giving my resume out. They just brought me in for an interview and I was so tired doing plumbing outside. I was like, I want to do anything. And the guy's like, well, you can make this money if you sell stuff. What, that much? I can make $55,000. It's crazy. And I can control that, right? And so I did retail for like 6 or 7 years. Okay. And that was like a significant mile marker for me, not necessarily just because of the money and the motivation, which was important, but also learning life skills communication-wise.
Of course.
Before that, like I couldn't go to a party and talk to people or go out and talk to people or say hi to people or anything. I was just like completely introverted.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's such a shock to me.
Like, is it? I don't know.
Like, I feel like you, like, it's such a shock because you've chosen a path that I think is quite inspirational. I think a lot of people seek you, whether it's for a money side or just friends and family, just to be around you. And there had to be something there that kind of gave you that confidence. And it sounds like it was this TELUS.
Yeah, working.
That job, right?
You know a lot of people in residential, like resale and real estate that worked in cell phones and stuff like that. Like, it's crazy.
Oh my gosh. That or restaurants.
It's one of the two. So that was like a genesis point for me where it's like, okay, it taught me all these like soft skills, being able to communicate with people and getting into where we are in this industry today was a pure accident.
So like, how did your childhood, you know, shape the way you see money and security and both of those things? Like how did your childhood kind of shape you?
So most people would connect with this. If we were to go back to that 12-year-old self, I believe that generally speaking, most people, if they were to reflect for just 30 seconds, like even right now, there is some point in their life where it could have been like a traumatic event or a significant event. Something happened where it created like an imprint in your mind. That imprint creates like a belief. And that belief carries people through most of their lives. Like they, for the most part, they don't really change. Yeah, they have little evolutions. They learn, they pick things up like most people do. But they don't break it. They don't shake it. And so I think for me, that belief was when I was 12 and I saw that we had nothing. And all I was told was we don't hold, save, you know, don't spend money, keep it tight. And that carried me up until I was in my mid-30s.
Wow. A long time.
It's a long time.
Yeah. Did you seek anything to break that belief of what you've learned? Like during that time? Or did you know, or were you just like, this is what it is?
I've got some messed up stories around that, but I think the short version is it wasn't until I had to realize that you can make more money. Mm-hmm. I had to understand that if you create a certain type of value, you can make more money. And if it goes, it doesn't mean you can't get it back. I had a belief that if I spent it, or if I didn't invest properly, or if I didn't look at it, or whatever, that I would never get money back, ever. I had this belief. There was the year 2018, so I'm open to admit this now, but during the time, I had by far my most successful year as an individual, as a company, by a long shot, like 4 times the amount of income that I ever would have dreamed I could ever make. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even look at my accounts. Mm-hmm. Like, I was afraid to look at my accounts. Like, I'd spend money. I had a bookkeeper. Mm-hmm. We had that going on.
Yeah,
we had
it. Smart.
We knew what to do with the money. I didn't have issues with taxes. Yeah. But I didn't spend anything. Nothing. I had like a car that was 10 years old.
Right.
I wasn't buying new clothes. I was afraid to invest into anything. Like, it was because I was always afraid that I wasn't going to get any money back.
Yeah. That's a belief for a lot of people.
Yeah.
What tools did you take from that to unlearn that?
Took time. So we talked about the imprint and the belief that that creates. I think for a lot of people, there is a moment in their lives, like, could be a traumatic moment. It could be a great thing. It could be an inspirational moment, but there's something in people's lives when this happens, it kind of wakes them up. And when it comes to money, it's no different. And could be, and I think in most cases, it's usually like something negative or bad because it forces you to recalibrate and consider what's going on in your life. And what happened for me is it was that moment. There was a moment where I got incredibly sick and I was in the hospital for a month and I almost died. And you would think that woke me up. That actually didn't. It definitely shocked me.
It was pneumonia, guys.
Yeah.
That was the first one, right?
The first time was pneumonia. And then the second time was the shot.
The COVID shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which we talked about.
Yeah.
Which is super, like, facing your own mortality during COVID. Like, wow. I mean, how could you not take something from that? How long were you sick for?
Without going into the depth of all of it,
of these shots.
I reacted very quickly within 24 hours. I went in the hospital. They let me out 24 hours later. And within 12 hours after that, I was taken unconscious in the ambulance back to the hospital, and I was there for a month.
Wow.
In short, it caused issues with my heart, swelling, and other
things,
other factors that I don't really care to talk about.
Yeah.
And that caused both emotional, psychological, and like physical effects that to this day, I'm still, you know, going to the hospital and doing checkups for.
Like, what goes through your mind when you're confronted with that? You know, like, it's so interesting. Like, only people like yourself who've been in those positions, like, what goes through your mind when you're kind of confronted with your own mortality?
When I was that sick, I didn't really think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You're too sick and unconscious with drugs and so forth to really think about it. The point that really stood out to me, and I've had some really close losses lately, and so I try not to over index for my fear when I've heard of other people who've lost their lives recently, was when I was in the ICU and I heard, and my heart rate kept dropping so low, mm-hmm, over and over and over again, that the thing would beep and it would go constantly beep. And so I was afraid to go to sleep. I was afraid to think further than 5 minutes ahead. I was just in this constant perpetual state of fear, which probably says a lot about like my feelings about my life in general. But I was alone because it was during COVID, right? Your wife's not allowed to visit you. Your family's not allowed to visit you. There's nobody around, right? And so I felt guilt in the sense that I thought that I should have had a better impact and a greater impact on people. I felt remorse in the sense that I wasn't, you know, a better friend to my friends. I felt all these emotions and just general like kind of sadness and despair, which is not what you want, right?
No.
I'm like, this isn't ideal. You know, I don't think anybody, I don't know what people typically feel, but I felt all of that and I just burst out in tears. It was a moment of almost like grief and sadness, but almost like disgust with myself in a way, like a reflection to say like, I'm not happy with what I've done or the people that I've, how I've impacted people and all these things. Not that I did something bad.
Do you ask yourself that, this is such a personal question. Mm. This is get on top. Like, do you ask yourself, like, give me another chance? Like, is that going through your mind at that time to be like, I'm going to do something different if I have a chance to kind of,
I don't think I consciously thought like that.
No.
I think I was just more of like reflectively sad about being in that situation. And what first started as a point of like, woe is me, kind of turned into a point of maybe, I don't want to say like, I'll do better, but more of like, I'm like a focus, like I'm going to get through this. I'm going to figure this, hopefully heal.
And get
to a better place.
Heals. Yeah.
And in your mind, I think it's just, it's all happening so fast. You're not sitting there thinking like, if I do or if I don't. But definitely a lot of like reflection around how you live your life.
And so what priority shifts did you do overnight after that?
So you would think that going through something like that, it would have a greater impact. It definitely did.
Yeah.
Like, no doubt. Like, at the time, I ran a business with some partners and they were able to cover the load for a period of time. And I made all these intentions around my health and my friendships. And I think on the positive side, I was much more openly emotional and connected with people that I cared about, which I'd never been before, always very surface level. So that was pretty interesting. On the negative side, I think in, you know, 3 months, I was just back at just working and grinding and thinking like, okay.
3 months. Wow.
Oh yeah. Well,
3 months after COVID. Yeah.
Yeah. After the experience of going through that, I was able to function and work. I didn't go to the office for a few months.
Yeah, of course.
But to go back to this, it was a more of a conversation of, oh yeah, I'm going to change. I'm going to do these things. And it didn't. Like I did, but I didn't. I just got back to what I was always known for, which is working hard. And now my mindset was always like, okay, if something were to happen to me, I want to make sure my wife's taken care of. I want her to be focused because that's who I am. Yeah. I'm always like, that's
giving.
For her specifically, I was always a provider.
Yeah.
Even though she didn't want that, that was what it was.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny how that happens when the male, female figure.
I'm a provider.
Yeah. I was like, I'm fine. Let's take a step back. So you obviously were working at TELUS. Mm. And then what got you this jump off from being in a totally different direction?
Yeah.
I think a totally different direction.
Yeah, it's so different.
And then also, I know that you've gone through some partnerships, gone through some business ventures.
Yep.
Tell me that chapter of your life.
Yeah. So the getting into the industry was really simple. I played soccer with a guy and he said to me one day, he's like, Alex, I've known you for 3 years. Do you own a house? And he was a mortgage broker. I was like, no. He's like, let's go get you one. So this is like 2009. And he's like, do you have 10 grand? I said, yeah. I got it. That's all I have. But he's like, let's go get your house. So we got pre-approved and I bought a house in like 14 days.
Oh,
and then I moved in like 2 weeks later. It was pretty crazy.
That's crazy.
And the best thing that he ever did was he said, Alex, don't ever sell this place. Like keep this house. Don't ever sell it, no matter what you do. And the second thing he said is come work for me. So the first part was great advice. The second part, not so much, other than getting in the industry. So he got me to get excited about getting the mortgage industry. And I had all the typical feelings that most people do. I said, I'm not good with money. I don't know math. Like what
typical.
He's like, what it's about is people and problem solving. Those are the two things. You can learn the rest. It's true. If you're good with people, you can communicate, you can solve problems, then you can figure this out. So we worked together for a few years. I didn't really succeed, you know, in the business or financially. And my wife was still going to school. We didn't have enough money to get by. So I took a full-time job. I left the industry for a year. And that was the first bout of pneumonia that I had where I ended up quitting the job. And I came back in full time. But the second time I came back, it was different because I had experienced it the first time. Being self-employed is hard. You know this.
Yeah.
Like the financial part, getting started, anybody getting started running a business, I have full emotional support for you because I know how hard it is.
I just heard someone that I was speaking to and she was too afraid to call herself an entrepreneur and to work for themselves and be a sole proprietor. And I said, why? And she's like, well, because stereotypical that they're going to fail like with pretty soon, pretty fast. It's like, I don't know. I don't know about that stereotypical set, right? But I think what she was trying to say is, you know, it's difficult and people are really see that from the outside. But I think a lot of people also go in, the dreamers are always the one that make it through. They're the ones that work a little bit harder, right? And have a little bit of a deeper purpose.
So she felt like she didn't want to call herself an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Interesting. Because she thought entrepreneurs fail.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
But I do, like, I mean, I am a pro entrepreneur gal. I think it's your way of artistry in the world that is so conditioned.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm a different take on that. I'm like, I think I knew when I was 5 years old, I was going to be an entrepreneur. And I think a lot of people, some people want to be that lawyer or doctor. And I knew very early on that being an entrepreneur wasn't being your own boss.
Yeah.
It was about bringing your take to something in the world.
Yeah.
And that's a difference that I think. Yeah.
Because when you're a business owner, you realize everybody's your boss.
Everyone's your boss.
Everybody.
Everyone's your boss.
Your team members.
Everybody. Oh yeah, I know. Tamara's sitting right there. Everyone knows about her. She's my boss. But, you know, finding your purpose throughout it. And for you, when you went into the business of being a mortgage specialist, why did you go into a bank first? Or did you go into just a broker life?
No, a broker. He taught me the difference day one.
Okay.
Said, you don't want to be those guys. Those guys only have one option. These guys have many. That was kind of the foray
into
it.
Which is very true. Like, I mean.
Yep. Yeah, it is. But I think the part that he instilled into me that today has been most effective and most beneficial, and I'll never forget it, was that he really articulated to me how you can help people create wealth.
Love that.
He would repeat that over and over again to me. He's like, Alex, I've been able to build and do this with my homes, and I have 3 properties over here, and I've done this, and this is what supports my family. And he drilled that in my head. And at that point, like day one, for him, it wasn't like, there was never a rate sheet conversation. It was always a conversation of like, what are you going to do to help these people? How are you going to help these people? And it would be constantly that conversation. And so I think I'm pretty fortunate in the sense I didn't get into a sales industry. I got into a service advising service, industry.
Yes.
Whereas a lot of people come from the banking background, which isn't bad. I have team members on my team that came from banking, but they get drilled into their head. It's sell, 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 you know, call, 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 call. Mm-hmm. And I'll go even deeper. Sales in general is not a bad thing. We get that mindset.
Of course.
But the sales cycle that I think a lot of people get through the bank, it doesn't come from a perspective of helping and serving. It comes from a standpoint of hitting numbers.
Yeah. And spending your time on getting those numbers in is the most important.
I mean, business is in general numbers, but if you take care of, you know, the people and their end goals, then you'll get everything you ever wanted, right?
Yeah. I mean, Mark Cuban said that sales cures all, which is like so true in business.
Yeah.
Like it is. But if you don't do it genuinely, then it will never come back for you.
Yeah. I had to sell my wife to be with me.
I know. Right? Like, you know, I'd like, come on.
Yeah.
What did you like? I mean, okay. So you're in this world of being a broker.
Yeah.
You're underneath or you're with a broker that maybe you didn't have the same, you didn't align, it sounds like. When did you decide to go on your own and like really take it? And this is where I think when you're in the middle of that summit, you're in that buildup mode, right? And of course, you've had all this journey behind you that has kind of given you so much. You've created great relationships. Why did you decide to do that?
I have to hit my head against every wall possible, Morgan. Mm-hmm. So for people listening, it's like, if you want to know what not to do, let's talk. Like, I'll tell you everything what not to do. So the first round was a lack of alignment purely because, I mean, he didn't have an office or a team or he wasn't part of a brokerage or anything. So it was like, come over on my dinner table and I'll teach you. But that was never going to work.
No.
And he'll admit that. So when I left and came back the second time, I found someone who had a team and I thought that would work really well. The good part was he let me work on his deals. I didn't get paid, but he let me work on his deals, which was really neat because I got the experience. The best part was being part of an office where I could physically watch, see, and respond and react and see how'd you do that? How'd you do that? How'd you do that? And all the guys and girls there were awesome. Like, hey, yeah, you just do this and this and this. Like, they weren't going to give you business, but it's like, if you do these things and you follow or watch what I do, you'll succeed in this capacity. And if you just watch people, you can see that. The best part and the best thing that ever happened to me was honestly just like leaving all of my job, my income, my everything and burning the boats, which some people say don't do. And that's fine. I'm not here to say like you should or shouldn't.
Okay.
But for me, that was the best thing I ever did.
What do you mean by burning the boats?
So the end of 2015 was my first full-time year in the industry where I hadn't worked for anyone. And I made, I think, $30,000 of revenue, which means nothing.
Right.
Like you spend your money. And I had a mortgage and a car payment. My wife was going to school full-time. And so at the end of the year, I had to self-reflect and say, okay, like I've already done this once. I'm doing this a second time. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to do this, I got to do something differently. And so for me, burning boats meant going all in, leaving every source of income, everything I had, leaving the team in this case, which was fine. We had an agreement in that capacity.
Okay.
And quite frankly, just going all in, like everything. I hired a coach. I used my line of credit.
This is very important. At Oakland Realty, real estate is personal. It's your first home, your next chapter, your biggest decision, and your biggest opportunity. That's why we lead with people first. Trusted advisors, deep local knowledge, and a commitment to doing things right every time. Whether you're buying, selling, or simply planning your future, our agents are here to guide you with clarity, confidence, and care. Because a home isn't just a place you live, it's where life happens. Oakland Realty, inspiring positive change, one person, one home, and one community at a time. You know, for many people, they come back to an industry and they're like, okay, I've done it. I've done it one way.
Yeah.
What was the thing that turned you on to being like, I could get coached to kind of succeed in the way I needed to go to, right?
Yeah.
Like what, I feel like coaches have a kind of a bit of a bad rep. Like it's like, oh yeah, they, you know, you're getting a coach, but you're successful, or you're getting a coach, but you're in a different industry. Did that help you?
Having a coach?
Yeah.
It changed my life.
I know. This is where I want people to understand this.
Yeah.
having a coach is like having literally a coach on the side of the sidelines and telling you to take like layups or
100%.
To strategize. And there's a reason why they're called a coach.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of, I'm just saying this.
So why does Connor McDavid looks so good right now. Why does this guy have a skills coach? Why does he have a coach, head coach? Why does he have that? He has skills, obviously. He knows what he's good at.
He's a good player.
Yeah.
He's a good player, but he needs help.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. So keep on going. So you got to hire a coach. Did you kind of redo your brand or what was the...
Oh yeah, that was a lot. Like, again, it was the all-in year.
Yeah, it was
so
all in.
I hired the coach and I said, a success to me when we spoke is we defined success. And we defined what that was from business targets and all that kind of fun stuff, the feeling, the outcome, what it looked like. And I basically said, like, we had this two-year plan. I said, how do I make this happen in the next 6 months? So we just thought differently. We're like, okay, well, if we want to do that, you've got time, right? Okay, got time. This is what we can do to compress time.
Low cost time.
Yes. At the time, my time was worth very little.
Yeah, of course.
So we used that. And then the second thing was, as soon as we started to have traction, I recognized quickly what I was good at and bad at. And he helped me to, and he was very good. Alex, you're not good at these things. And it's not that you can't do them. It's that they suck up your soul. You keep telling me that we need to let go of that either by finding somebody else or whatever. I said,
okay,
dude, I got a line of credit. Let's go. So we hired an assistant. For a lot of people, this is not the truth, but for a lot of people to say way too early, for me, it was the right time.
Mm.
I sucked at training my assistant, so I lost her in less than 2 weeks. But we found another person 2 weeks later that was phenomenal and that changed my career trajectory.
Wow, that's amazing.
So having a person to speak to in confidence and to share ideas and strategies, at the time, I needed someone who had tactics and strategies. Mm-hmm. And who could help me stay focused.
How did you find that coach? Did you just Google it?
I asked around.
I like that.
I think if you talk to other
people.
These guys
ask around.
Yeah. Coaches have a bad rap.
They have a bad rap. I don't understand.
And this is a new thing because coaches, like, it's like the coach's coach. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like everybody is a coach. But the truth of the matter is all you have to do is look for someone who's done the thing and or help the people that you want to be like. Mm-hmm. And those are people you want to work through. There's phenomenal coaches in every space. I still have one to this day. Mm-hmm. And what you need to do is find the people who are killing it and ask them who they talk to.
So for me, I like to have a coach.
Yeah.
Someone that's like a soundboard for me.
Sure.
To handle strategy, to help the team. I love a good mentor. Mm. Like a mentor, someone that's way of like in a totally different industry.
Mm.
Someone that's kind of like, they're able to see it in a different perspective. So when I'm bringing like very tactical things to them, they're able to express it in a different way.
Yeah.
And that person has to be 80, the same.
Has to be 80.
Has to be like 70 plus.
Yeah,
like they've gone through the experience.
Yeah.
And then you have to have your cheer squad. Like, cool. I truly believe that those three things make for a great player.
Love that.
And then the rest is up to you and your mentality. And I want to get to that.
Mm.
You've gone through so much resilience through obviously being kind of the sport 12-year-old all the way up. Until you're like, okay, let's burn some boats and start something fresh. When did you decide to get a partner? Where did that come from you?
So in 2018, I got to a point where, again, back to the comment, I'm a believer, just do what you're really good at and let go of everything else. And at that time, I was very fortunate to be getting so much business coming in the door that I couldn't handle it. And so I had the option of either hiring more people or finding a business partner. And through conversations, I found some people that I thought could be better as partners than as employees.
Mm-hmm.
And so we partnered in 2018-19 range. The partnership lasted for about 3.5 years.
Right.
And we had a difference of a final direction. But during that time, we did some incredible things.
Like amazing.
We built the number one brokerage in the country.
In the country.
Yeah. We did so much business that it was obscene. And this was all obviously during the highs and lows and the COVID and stuff like that. We hired like 3 employees the day COVID came in. Like the day that we got shut down, it was like, well, we have 3 people starting today. This should be fun. Like, what do we even do right now?
Keep on going. And it was a good time for you to do it.
Yeah, it was rapid fire.
You know, what rapid.
And you know what? The thing about that partnership is like, it's like a marriage. Like you really have to go into a partnership knowing that, I mean, this is essentially like your second marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of people that can work, and for some it cannot. But you have to recognize that just like a marriage, like you change a lot.
You change a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, as you know, I'm in a partnership.
Yeah.
I got to tell, we're like totally different people.
Yeah.
After a decade.
Yes, you are.
We are so, well, and we're today. Different people in general.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you're, I think this is a really good point of what are three things that, or three or four things that you, or that come to mind, like through your, of course, 3.5 year endeavor with partnership that you wish you knew before getting into that partnership?
I think going into it, I could have and or should have going back. I genuinely believe that a lot of the things that I felt maybe not as positive about, it could have been changed had all of us, including myself, done some better self-reflection in the beginning as to who we actually were.
Okay.
But I think the truth is I needed to go through that experience to know better who I am, both positive and negative.
Of course. Yeah.
You know, I think we did a lot of things right. Like we did obviously an understanding of our behavioral analysis. If I was to look back, okay, what would I have done differently or better?
What, like, what would you wish that someone told you before getting into that partnership?
I think understand where your personal goals lie outside of business.
So good, Alex.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, because we all might be very successful and have different perspectives on where
we're going. What success is.
Yeah, and they're doing incredible where they are now today. Yeah. It's more of a conversation of like, what are your personal dreams and goals? Because even if you build the most successful company, if you're not aligned personally, it'll never work.
No.
Same as your partnership with your wife or husband or whatever, right? Like it's so significant. And if that's not aligned, no matter what you do, it won't work.
No, you're right. My tip would be make sure your shareholder agreement is really tight. And
are
I
your
would
partners
also,
listening to this?
And also, no, and why I say that is, you get very excited when you first start a partnership.
Yeah.
So just make sure that, and I'm just giving that as a kind of, and my mind is totally fine. So
Yeah.
I do think that looking back, I wouldn't have rushed that process as fast because you're so excited.
Yeah.
Because you have to ask, what if?
What if I, yeah.
What if someone,
yeah.
Something.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it today. It's Chinese New Year. But like, you know, what happens if this happens? I wish someone actually told me, hey, there's lots of unknown here. Let's make sure it's jot down so everyone's comfortable. Because I think at the end of the day, people just want to, in partnership, want to feel safe in that partnership. It's like what you said about marriage.
Yeah.
And they don't expect you to get divorced ever. Ever.
I think it's like a North American thing to be offended by putting something on paper.
Yeah, it is.
It's like you got to do the same thing with your employees and your wife partnership and your partnership, which is like, this is not bad. We're just defining the terms. So we're clear on if for whatever reasons things go this way or on the positive things go great. Let's just define what that looks like.
Yeah.
You know, it's like one of the things that we're on our team. It's if we have a conversation, both constructive, it should always be constructive, but even if there is, you know, hey, we got to do something better or differently, we always follow up with defining specificity. What exactly does that look like? Are we in agreement on what this looks like? We're going to put this in writing and you're going to reply back to confirm that you understand this. And if you don't, we're going to talk about it again because we have to make sure we define that, right?
We have to define it.
Yeah. A lot of partnerships come because of a lack. I think that's where a lot of partnerships fall is that they come because I lack something as opposed to I see the opportunity too.
Yeah, I think the opportunity that I think you're right. There's two different ramps of partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it, obviously you get to a point where you might not be aligned and or the vision, as you mentioned, didn't, you know,
match
for the next year. Tell me what you've had such a huge success in your career after that. Like, I mean, tell me the progression of that from when you were like, I'm going on my own and. Bye. Now I'm building this massive team that's killing it.
Yeah. When we decided to go different directions, there was a few months of trying to figure that all out again, you know? Do I want to do it the same way? What would it look like if I did it differently? What approach should I take? And to be quite transparent with you, the first year was just a blur. It was just basically like getting out of the partnership and running. Okay, like let's get this going again. Let's go fast as we can. The second year was a continuation of that. Last year was the year of discovery, where it was more of a conversation that I had internally and externally with my business coach of like, what does my life look like? What are we building here? What does this look like? And I think
what's
success-
your perfect day?
What's that?
What's your perfect day?
Yeah, what is my
perfect- Every coach asks that. They say, actually, what would be your perfect day?
It's funny. I don't think he's asked me.
Oh my God, you tell him that my coach
Craig,
asked me that.
You ask. no, defining like, how do you want to feel?
How do you want to feel? How do you want to leave it, right?
Yeah.
When did you get to a place where you felt less chaotic and you started to get on the train, on the tracks?
When I don't know when that is. We'll talk about that when I get there. I think this year has been pretty significant. Maybe the last few months has really been notable. Mm-hmm. I think here's the truth. in real estate, in mortgage, it's not complicated. Mm-hmm. It's hard, but it's not complicated. You don't need to complicate it.
No.
You can have success as a real estate agent or mortgage or finance or any industry if you put in the time to understand what you're doing. You focus really, really clearly on a very small subset of people and you're constantly out there serving. If that's all you did all day long, communicating with people.
Preach, Alex. Yeah. Preach.
you'd have success, right?
You would.
We work at, like, I know you know this, which is like, people come into the industry and they try to help everyone. But mm-hmm. if we just tried to focus on helping one person over and over and over again, then you would be successful in what you do.
Yeah.
Right? Don't overcomplicate what you don't need to complicate.
You get so asked so many questions from different families that you're serving, right?
Yes. I mean, every day.
You know, I think people don't realize that on the mortgage side, you're really opening the drapes of a lot of people's like ghosts and mm-hmm. hidden secrets from mm-hmm. their families mm-hmm. and fears, right? Mm-hmm. How do you manage that every day? Like, do you feel like is it part of your purpose?
Yeah. It's like, it's active service, right?
Yeah.
So it's an opportunity to show someone a better way. I think the coolest thing for me is that I can say, I screwed up here, 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 here. So I can share what we can do together to try to either avoid that or get you closer to your goal. So I can share it from an experiential perspective. Mm-hmm. Most things that I talk to people about, like I screwed up on that cost me money, but I can help you avoid doing that. You hit the nail on your head. Money is something different for every person, right? So the engineer sees it as like, okay, I have to do this, right?
Yeah, move those dots to connect them all.
Yeah, and so for those people, you have to speak in strategy mm-hmm. and very technical terms and numbers to show clear outputs, right?
Of course.
For some people, it's exceptionally emotional, right? Like we talked about, right? Everyone has an emotion to it, but some people it's very emotional. There is no strategy, no nothing. And it's like, how do I change my actions and behaviors because this behavior is creating this emotion? So you have to talk to them about their feelings. Like, how do you feel if this happens?
Oh, I love that.
What is the emotion that happens at this point? And people are always shocked when we go that deep. Mm-hmm. Like, they're always very surprised.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's
I've had more people cry on the phone about mortgages than you would ever imagine in your life.
This is what I don't think people recognize is, you know, I think as realtors, we pass them to a mortgage specialist to do all the hard work.
Yeah.
Like, I actually believe that.
Yeah.
It's like throw in the puck to you guys.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because, you know, you guys have to really open it up, right? And then make sure that everything is going to piece together to give them the dream that they always wished for.
Yeah.
So it's cool to hear that. And how do you kind of instill that hope in them? I guess, like, obviously you're talking
goals?
From experience.
What are your
goals?
What
are your dreams?
Yeah. So we want to understand what that big picture looks like. And then we'll ask them again. And we'll ask them again because they'll say it differently. And then eventually they'll say something that you don't expect. And that's where you pull from.
Okay.
Right? Like, I think if you ask someone the hard question a few times, they will start to say it differently and they'll start to open up about what success in this realm means to them.
Amazing.
What does that mean? Oh, well, I just want to be able to, you know, show my kids that they could live in the Lower Mainland when they grow up and they're only, you know, 4 and 6 years old right now. Mm-hmm. What would that mean to you if that were to happen? Well, it would mean that, you know, they wouldn't have to move away. How would that make you feel? Well, that make me feel like really happy and proud of myself.
Yeah.
Okay. So if we were able to help you find a way to let your kids have a home now, such that when they become 19 or 21 years old, they own a piece of real estate such that they can live closer to home, it'll make you feel proud and happy. And then, you know,
would you do it?
Yeah. So then we get to their goal. And then it's not a conversation of like, hey, which lender are we going with? It's a conversation of, how do we help get you to that goal? And that is something that actually lasts. Because I'll tell you this, we talk to 5 to 7 new people a day. And a lot of them are people coming from the past mm-hmm. back to us, thankfully. Yep.
Thank you, referrals and repeats.
Repeat. Yeah, that's a big part of our client base now. And when they come back, I always ask, hey, and I just genuinely want to see if mm-hmm. they know, what rate did you get last time? Nobody knows.
Oh, no one knows.
Not a single person, ever.
They remember you.
Yeah.
They remember you, though.
They're like literally nothing about it. It's just like, I don't know about my payments might go. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I have no idea.
And they seek your advice to hopefully get them exactly what they need, which is a pretty amazing thing. I want to touch on, I know I could talk to you forever, Alex, and I feel like I could for another 2 hours, but I want to talk a little bit about like a day in the life of you as a entrepreneur and sure. what you're excited about in the next 5 to 6 months.
5 to 6 months. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. So are we talking about like, what does my day look like mm-hmm. on a regular day? I mean,
I think a lot of people want to know what that looks like.
Yeah, it's very different than it was like a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago. So right now, my obsession is teaching my team and making them better. So we're very obsessed with pouring into them. We've had a few people that have really progressed and they can do now what I do. And we've built essentially like our model, our frameworks, our way of talking,
your
our
standard.
Way of communications, our standards. So I'm in love with coaching my team right now. Absolutely love it. So love that's always a part of every day. I always have coaching. It's usually 30 minutes a day, every day, either with a one-on-one or with a group. So that's one part.
Easy.
The second thing is I always start my day with intention and intent. So let's go from the start.
This is what I want. What I wanted to get to, because when I first met Alex, he was like, "Oh yeah, I start with an intention every morning." I'm like, "What?
Yeah.
What?"
Yeah. So if you want to go really deep, we have a lot of ways. But the short version is that every single day I write in a book, and when I write in a book, I write my top three intentions of the day. Top three. It's like you've heard many people say this, but like, what are my three gratitudes? What are my intentions for the day? And then I look at my phone on my notepad on my phone. It comes up an alarm at 4:30 to 5 a.m. and it says, "Look at your goals." So I look at my goals. My goals this year are very different than last year, but I look at them. So
you look at them, or do you talk them out in your mind?
I just look at them. Okay, I just read them. Just simple. They're there. I can read them.
They're there.
I mean, if I talk loud, I'm gonna wake up my wife.
How many
goals? She doesn't like waking up. I have five.
Hey, easy.
Yeah. So my goals this year are very different from last year as well. Last year they were 4 out of 5 were business. This year 4 out of 5 are life.
Great.
Yeah. I mean, I have business goals.
Will you get another dog?
Oh man, Sarah's asking me all the time for another pug. She's like, "We need 4. We have 2." So waking up with intention, looking exactly at my goals every single day, writing them down, the three things I'm going to do that day. So it's just the three things I need to do, not 10 things, not 50 checklists. Like I can't keep up with that.
No.
I'm like a one-track mind. That's it. Coaching on every single day and then relationship building. I've done this since I started my career and I still do it to this day is I contact 5 people every day. That's
beautiful.
It. And it's so simple. It could be a friend. It could be a client. It could be a business partner. It could be someone new I want to talk to. And it's so easy because I enjoy it. You know what I mean?
That's your favorite place. Does that fill your cup the most of all those things?
Oh yeah. I went on a walking meeting today. I had a wonderful coffee. I get to hang out with you. I'm going to meet with another gentleman that I do commercial business with. And I'm like, this is like the day of my life. I love this.
I love that. My kind of last tie up is we've talked a little bit about luck in the past, and I want you to talk to me a little bit about what that means to you. Luck.
You don't believe in it? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to use it in terms of like, what is it? Yeah. It's what you create.
It's what you create.
We talked about the mindset thing. So like, we can go really deep there. Given the time that we have, we won't. We'll go as surface deep
as we
can.
You're going to be episode 2. Of
Let's
Alex.
Go. Genuinely, we like there's the tried and true, we create our luck thing, but it's like a journey to understanding how you believe in a way that you can trick your brain to believe that you can do the thing that you didn't think you could ever do before. So to say that backwards again, you have to constantly trick yourself to believe that you can actually do the thing and that those things that are stopping you are not obstacles, but opportunities every single day. And so that luck conversation is simply, how many problems can I solve today? Where can I find an issue in my business, in my marriage, in my friendship that I can try to figure out how to solve? And I do not solve them all.
No, of course
not. It's a constant evolution. But it's that idea of luck. I'm like, I always go back and I'm like, well, if I want to be lucky, I better go and do something, right?
You better get moving, right? And now going into kind of our final question is back to what are you excited about for the next 5 to 6
months? Well, I got 3 things. On a personal note, I wanted to ride 20 days on the mountain this year. So I'm at 12 out of 20. We're doing good.
I'm gonna hit my
20. Never done it before. Most I ever done was like 4. So we're looking good.
Okay, we're going.
Yeah, which is pretty killer.
Which mountain?
Big White.
Okay, Big White. You're lucky. Okay, fine.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Not bad.
So 20 days right there. And this will be in the summer, but 30 days on my boat will be incredible.
30 days on your boat. You look like you have so much fun on that boat.
Yeah, it's a happy place.
Yeah.
You got to find that state of flow, right? So that would be on my personal side of things, right?
All I think about is that's a lot of money on gas.
A lot of money on gas. You know, some people like their Lambos. Some people like their Rollies.
You know what
I'm like,
I mean?
Give me my Apple Watch and my boat.
Yeah, your Apple Watch. I love that.
Yeah, I'm stoked. That's like my one, actually, around money. Like that, I had such a hard time justifying that in my mind until I could just say, I don't need to justify it.
It's a joy thing. It's like me and going to Hawaii. People are always like, you're the
why are you in Hawaii?
Poster,
do you need that?
Poster child of Hawaii because you're there so much. I'm like, the happiest place I have.
One thing I heard, someone said this or I read it or listened to it. Well, 2 things around.
We need to have one thing that people are always like thinking, I read it, I listened to it, or I heard it from a friend. We need one one sentence for that now because everyone doesn't know where they get it from.
I absorbed it.
I absorbed it.
Yeah.
Boom, we've decided.
Yeah, I love it.
Okay, you absorbed it from what? What did you hear?
I'm pretty confident it was a book that I listened to and that I read as well. And it's, you do not need to justify the thing that you want. And if you say, I want it, you do not need to need it. Mm-hmm. So for context, when you start to have quote unquote success, either financially or otherwise, people around you start to say, why do you need that? I got it from my family. Why do you need another boat? Why do you need that? Why do you need to buy the house? Why do you need to go there?
Mm.
Why do you need to do that? Why do you need to go for dinner again?
Or they'll have a criticism of that's a bad idea. That's like, it's one of the
You don't need
other.
To buy that. Go rent it.
Yeah, it's like, or you're like, oh, why lease that car? You should buy it outright.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
I don't know.
Now my feedback is this. Morgan? Okay,
feedback. Go, honey.
I want it.
Yeah, I want it.
You don't have to say you deserve it. You don't have to justify it.
I actually never justify. I think that's the thing with Tauruses. We just like nice things.
Heck yeah.
And it's just like, we want it. So we're going to get it. Simple as that. But I love that. I love that mindset. But tell me your third thing. Your third thing you're looking forward to. And I think some people want to hear
I don't even think I said number two.
You did, yeah, you did. You said your boat.
Boat and surfing was the same thing. So
okay, two.
Yeah, well, it's like, well, number two is obviously the event that we're putting on in
Cologne. This is what we're talking
about. I'm fired up about this.
Okay, let's talk about
the
event.
So we're doing, a year ago, I decided to create try to explain to people. I'm like, I wanted to create a movement. I wanted to create an energy. Mm-hmm. A lot of people look at me because of the personal brand, the pug. Obviously rebuilding the brand after, obviously.
Do people ever say, hi, Mr. Pug?
On the street, yes. I had someone come up to me yesterday in a Starbucks cafe in Abbotsford that I randomly was meeting my friend, and a lady came out and she's like, are you that pug guy? And she was, I think it was her birthday.
So
she was
cute.
Turning 68 years old.
Oh my God, you better buy her coffee.
So she ran to go to the coffee. It's free birthday thing. I was like, wow. She came up, she like shook my hand, she gave me a hug. I was like, this is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, the branding thing, all that was, it's something that people always come and ask me about. Like, how do you do this? How do you do these videos? How do you do this content? How do you do this creation?
Yeah.
And so I went to an event 2023 that really helped me a lot during that journey of not just creating content, but connecting with a community of the business misfits.
Mm.
All the people out there that didn't look like what your typical banker, typical realtor looked like, that wanted to find a new way to connect to people, to attract versus push. Meaning I wanted to continue to get people to come to me by attracting them to me instead of dialing for dollars. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
I call people because I like them, not because I want business from them. And so going through this event allowed me to understand what it was like to attract more, and it created an energy such that I wanted to do this here. So last year in Kelowna, we had an event with 100 people. We sold out in less than 45 days, which was so cool.
So cool.
I thought it was going to be just a bunch of realtors, mortgage brokers, but it ended up being realtors, mortgage brokers, finance, service, house, whatever. Builders, you name it. And the after
only 100
effects,
people though, hey?
Yeah, 100 people.
That I would assume that you guys would just be this year you do the same thing, 100 people?
250.
Perfect.
Yeah. So we're doing it again in Kelowna. And that was by popular demand. People wanted it to be, a lot of people from Lower Mainland come away from home, away from everything so they can focus. It's a one-day event, hyper-focused on personal branding, growth, everything to do with essentially building a brand that attracts other people to you. To become the name that everybody wants to know is really the goal, right? And every speaker is told, like, no gatekeeping, no holding things back, hyper-focused and building that energy.
Grow. That's not how you grow.
Yeah.
And all those things.
Yeah.
Of not sharing.
Yeah.
That's how you do not grow.
We want to do it all. And so that's my baby for the next 2 months. We're super stoked.
I'm
anybody
cheerleading
coming?
On. Yeah. I'm going to have you cheering.
We're going to get you up there. We're going to try to get you up there.
We'll see. We'll see. But no, I'm very excited for you, Alex. I know we can talk again for another half an hour, 45 minutes, but I'm getting the cut it out list of the podcast. Thank you for coming and joining us
on
Get On Top. I cannot wait to see what your next decade is. I really am watching and I'm cheering you on from the sidelines.
Absolutely. This is going to be a huge success. So I'm fired up.
Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Get On Top. Don't miss out on more incredible stories by rating, reviewing, and following our podcast on your platform of choice. Remember to tag us on social media at Get On Top Podcast. Until next time, keep climbing, keep striving, and always remember, the view is worth it from the top.
This podcast is produced and edited by Podfather Creative.